Healthcare, one American at a time.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, Chris, my friend, isn't it interesting? On last week's show, you and I were talking about the recent appearance from Andrew Colvin, the author of The Mothman Speaks and the Paracast. And we said there were no messages in our forums within hours, as I mentioned in an update to the show that you'll be hearing.
Within minutes, I couldn't believe it. Next time I went into the forum.theparacast.com, there was a thread.
Yes, and some critical, some not so critical, but Andy Colvin is in there, and he's punching away. He is being very forthright about his opinions and about his reasons behind his opinions. So it's a really fascinating presentation.
Right.
But sometimes it's delayed reaction.
Yeah, I invite all our listeners to tune in to forum.theparacast.com.
And I know there's going to be a lot of response to this one. We've already had listeners asking questions of our guest, Peter Robbins, who's an investigative writer known for his connection with the UFO field. He's a founding member and advisory board member of the Intruders Foundation, which, of course, was run by the late Bud Hopkins. And we've had him on the show in connection with that book he did called Left at Eastgate, which covers Rendlesham Forest. And we'll get into more about Rendlesham Forest later on in the show. What we know today maybe has any of the information that's been released by the Ministry of Defense in the UK. Has that helped us learn more about Rendlesham? But now let's talk about Bud Hopkins. And as I said in the brief eulogy I did, I didn't know Bud all that well. Never met him, talked to him on the phone a couple of times, had some email exchanges. Always a gentleman, really pleasant guy. Tell us about Bud Hopkins, Peter Robbins, and how you came to know him.
Well, good to be back on the show, guys, although a bit somber this time around. Bud passed away on August 21st, finally succumbing to liver cancer on top of other health complications, and those of us that knew him and loved him miss him very much. I guess, in a way, I'm one of the most fortunate people because we were friends for such a long time, and he was an esteemed colleague, a mentor. I worked for the foundation actually at one specific point when they were able to pay me $8 an hour, and then for many years as a volunteer.
So basically you're getting the same salary as all those people they've added to the employment rolls in Texas.
Well, exactly. But I chose to work at that rate because it was an honor and a privilege, and I was making a little doing some other things. Also, I guess our biggest connection besides the obvious is that we met when we were both painters. My career was kind of eclipsed by working in theater management and going on to, I guess, what I'm best known for as a writer. And we first met in early 1976, 35 years ago. The circumstances, and this could fill a whole show, so I'll do it as lively as I can. The year before, a series of events triggered the return of what I can only describe as a repressed memory from childhood, something I simply had not been able to address when I was 14 years old and managed to jam back in my subconscious. And 14 and a half years later, it came roaring back. And what it was a memory of an extraordinarily clear UFO sighting over the house my family lived in at the time on Long Island, New York, with my sister Helen. And after discussing it with her and being very careful not to tell her what I remembered, but just setting the scene and her coming back with the details that I remembered, she then began to tell me about associated memories she had with what we would now say was a classic UFO abduction encounter. This was 1975, however, and this was completely new to me, and it was very shocking. My sister was an honest and decent person and certainly not a liar, and where these details could have come from then was quite minimal. In any case, to cut to the chase, my life changed overnight, and I wanted very much to know what had happened to my sister. as did she, and overnight began to acquire and read books on the subject, not very interested in meeting people associated with it, figured they were all out of their mind. Any adults involved with the subject, like UFOs, would have to be. And then some months in, earlier the following year, I read an article in New York's Village Voice, not known for its UFO coverage, but it was an article on, I think, what MUFON regarded as the best case of the year for 1975. It was really well written, unlike any of the articles I had seen in the previous months in publications like the National Enquirer. And it was written by a New Yorker named Bud Hopkins, who happened to be a painter and whose work I had seen some time before at a gallery. And I found him in the phone book and cold called him. And we chatted a bit. He invited me over. And this was, 5 years before the publication of his first book, Missing Time. So by the time that happened, our friendship was fairly well established. And from there, on and off over the decades, I worked with him in any number of ways, but we remained very good friends even in the last years that we weren't working actively together. I still was a regular contributor to the Intruders Foundation, and right now we, the advisory board, are gearing up for our first meeting next month without Bud to make some decisions about the future of this important foundation.
Now, looking over the Intruders Foundation very briefly, is this kind of a support center for abductees or people who feel they might have been abducted?
You know, its goals were multiple. One was, yes, to be there in any possible sense of the word for people who felt they had been through this experience, many hundreds of whom Bud worked with very closely over the years and decades. For the first years, and I'm hard-pressed to tell you how many years, Bud developed and we followed up with many, many support group meetings. After a fashion, the number of people who wanted to be involved and who legitimately should have been was too big, so we broke it up into a number of support group meetings, occasionally with the absolute agreement of everybody that would be involved. A guest mental health professional might be along, or another specific guest. Everything always remained confidential. This is in no way an attempt to do therapy, something, a word that's very loaded and often tossed into this. Support group meetings are just that. It was the foundation also has endeavored to research and investigate this and to educate the public as much as possible. Intrudersfoundation.org is the website. There's a smattering of articles on there right now, but I'm hoping that one of the things that will happen is it's almost hard to explain how prolific Bud was as a writer, and an extraordinarily good one at that. And there are so many papers and letters and monographs and responses that he did wrote that are worthy of publication and for people to see, that that may be part of what we do in the future. We've also run for many years now a very successful lecture series in New York City, which we hope to get up and running again once the dust settles again as well.
Now, over the years, with all these investigations about people who claim to have been abducted, is there any singular threat, or do you find all sorts of different answers or possibilities depending on an individual's own experience?
Great question. For me, I'm only 35 years into the subject, so what do I know? I know that what we're dealing with is phenomenally elusive, and at the same time that there is now such a powerful database built on very real cases, and many of them, although many folks in the public have no idea, are not only have contributing very physical evidences in terms of documented, like a little scoop mark of epidermal tissue that is taken, immediately cauterizes, and it often is associated with when little Billy went missing from the 4th of July picnic, through to this implant phenomena, these very foreign bodies that are found subcutaneously in the skin and in places you wouldn't even believe sometimes, a number of which have been extracted and analyzed, and multiply witnessed UFO abduction incidents. The best known of which is witnessed the true story of the Brooklyn Bridge UFO abductions by Hopkins.
I want to get into a lot more of that with Peter Robbins. We are talking with Gene and Chris on
the Paracast.
I've got to tell you about this. GoToMeeting by Citrix, the way I meet online with my colleagues, has just added high-definition group video conferencing. It's called GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Now you can collaborate with anyone around the world face-to-face. And I've used GoToMeeting HD Faces because it's awesome. You see the facial expressions, and that can express so much more than words. And of course, the video quality is so clear and natural, it's got the highest resolution in the industry. Nothing compares. GoToMeeting with HD Faces will make your online meetings even more personal, engaging, and effective. Plus, it's so easy to use. All you need is an internet connection and a webcam. I want you to try GoToMeeting with HD Faces. My listeners can try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code PODCAST. The promo code is PODCAST at GoToMeeting.com.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident that the financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of the International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience and concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the cold hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? For a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster, subscribe now at theinternationalforecaster.com or call 877-479-8178. Experience the difference. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain investment advice tailored just for you. Don't wait another minute. Subscribe today at theinternationalforecaster.com or call 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178.
Are you tired of spending money for metal canning lids year after year? Then stop! Stop buying metal lids and get Tatler reusable canning lids. Made of USDA and FDA approved food grade plastic, Tatler canning lids let you safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single use throwaways that contain BPA, but Tatler canning lids are indefinitely reusable and guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning and contain no BPA. Tatler lids are dishwasher safe, perfect for standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders by phone at 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's 1-877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com. Tatler Reusable Canning Lids, the original since 1976.
Did you know nuclear radiation is still spewing out of the melted down reactors in Fukushima, Japan, and making its way across the entire U.S. continent, contaminating the air, water, and food? Dangerously high levels of radiation are a reality here. As a result, radiation poisoning is a distinct possibility for anyone living in the U.S., unless you do something to protect yourself. How? With liquid zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Without a doubt, liquid zeolite is by far the best product to remove radiation from your body. It safely removes toxins and heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. Liquid zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee, but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of liquid zeolite by calling 800-880-9976. That's 800-880-9976. Or go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
We're back. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. The guest is Peter Robbins. We're talking about the work of Bud Hopkins about UFO abductions. Maybe let's do a little bit of myth shattering here. This could be fast answers or short answers, but something to help people understand the abduction scenario, what it means.
Sure.
Okay, so yes or no, are all or most abductions things that are ascertained through hypnotic regression?
Absolutely not. Most of them are either remembered almost entirely intact, very much intact, or enough pieces that the individual has put it together themselves.
Okay. Of the cases that use hypnotic regression, has work been done to assess the value of regression? There's some controversy over that as to whether the act of trying to make someone remember a past event may have its own complications or may not even yield accurate information.
This is indeed considered very controversial in a number of areas of study. First thing to remember here is the intention of the individual involved, their character, their motivation, and the participation of the individual as well. What is put forward by debunkers and the skeptics community is that weak-minded people are seduced into or somehow find their way to charlatans like Hopkins and others who, for some incredibly neurotic reason, have this compulsion to convince people that they have been abducted by other intelligences. As trained hypnotists or hypnotherapists or regression specialists, they are then put under and led into having false memories put in their head to confirm this entirely specious nonsense for these crazy people like Hopkins. These things, for me, would be funny if they weren't so insulting. I'm not saying that there aren't unprincipled people that have used this extraordinarily interesting and often very valuable tool, which, again, when applied to this subject, let's just call it the most controversial subject in the world, and, you know, we're right up there with them. The mantra for a lot of thinking people, decent people who, you know, are open-minded and the like, is this can't be. Therefore, it isn't. Therefore, it's something else. Now, what can the other things be? Well, you're mentally ill. You want to feel special. You get a kick out of fooling people or embarrassing them. You are somebody who wants to be on the Oprah show. You're a disinformation agent of some kind, et cetera, et cetera. And Dr. Wilhelm Reich has a wonderful phrase called evasion of the obvious, and there are certain cases. And I would challenge anybody to read Witnessed, for example, or Intruders, and find, you know, fault in the methodology, the research, or the evidences presented. Hypnotic regression, and I have to tell you here, and I am on record with this, I was a witness to many regressions that were conducted over the years, specifically because I was requested to by a witness who might have developed a rapport with me, or by Bud, with the consent of the witness. Hopkins would take up to half an hour to put people under. I know this from another mentor, the late Pete Mazzola, a tough, no-nonsense New York City police detective, who was also a crack UFO investigator, who was so respected by NYPD that they allowed him to use their voice stress analysis technology at John Jay College of Criminal Justice uptown to run first-generation audio cassettes through of people in regression for UFO abduction or witnesses to cases. When you lead away. The same way that in a polygraph, you are asked, you know, if you're wearing a white shirt, are you wearing a white shirt? Yes. And then you're instructed to answer incorrectly, are you wearing a blue shirt? Yes. They get a calibration and they go forward from there.
So how would you do this under regression? Would you determine the accuracy of what the person is remembering?
Very simple. If they've come in with a series of memories or partial memories you've established within a serious professional interview or perhaps two, you are working with whatever given information you have. You never lead. You set the scene. You are never suggestive. Let me restate that. If you are ever going to ask a leading question, it is always away from the answer that would be the positive answer.
So basically you're trying to persuade them to say something other than what they want to say.
Just so. Okay. So that says it well.
Okay, so basically saying, well, okay, so the object was square-shaped. No, it was really round-shaped, or the alien had gray hair. No, he had no hair, whatever.
Now, let me give you an example of the opposite, and this is important. Several years back, I was approached by a gentleman through a colleague in the United Kingdom with a very responsible job in law enforcement, who had these experiences going on for his entire life. He lived with great concern that these would not only be found out by his family, who he seemed unable to tell because it was such a shattering reality for him, but more that he would certainly lose his credibility as a serving law enforcement personnel and lose his job. He had gone to see a hypnotic regressionist in the United Kingdom. We asked him specifically after that first session, before the first session, to let us know what he thought, whether or not he was going to continue with him or whether or not he was somebody we should never recommend. And when he completed it, he contacted myself and my colleague and said he seemed very well-meaning. He takes the subject seriously. My problem is I think he takes it too seriously, in that he expressed that he wants to work on a book about it. And as we were getting into the early material and I saw something in the sky, his question to me was, what did the spaceship look like? And at that point, even though I was under, I really had trouble. I think you get my point.
The point of being too leading, you don't want to convince somebody.
Well, the lawyer's great question of when did you stop beating your wife?
Well, the other issue, of course, is the accuracy of what you remember under hypnotic regression, assuming all the controls were taken.
Yes, I speak here from the first person.
Sure.
In the first years I was involved in this, because my memory to me was shattering enough, and it was a sighting, I was regressed by three different hypnotists. One, the detective police sergeant trained by the NYPD, or took his training to do regressive work for criminal investigation, the other by Bud, and the other by another hypnotist to bring me back to when I was 14. It was a fascinating experience. I feel I can speak, with some authority as somebody that's been under.
Well, Peter, why don't you give our listeners, I think, a better sense of this very life-changing experience that you had.
Sure.
Could you give us kind of a thumbnail sketch of what exactly happened?
I'd be glad to. It's certainly been published, and I've talked about it over the years, but yes, definitely. I was 14, my sister Helen just 12. We were playing on the front lawn of the home in the village we grew up in, about 30 miles east of New York City. Very idyllic childhood, wonderful family. I had a very happy childhood, I think, as much as anybody can say, and two wonderful sisters and great parents. And we were just goofing around in the front yard, and I have to say it was an absolutely beautiful late morning. Blue sky, not a cloud, and one of those days that people in suburban village America know quite well, where there's just nothing going on for an extended period of time, no ice cream man, no mailman, no kids playing, whatever. I caught something moving out of my right peripheral vision.
Out of his right peripheral vision in a moment with Peter Robbins. You're talking to Gene and Chris on
The Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Neighbors, do you need to bring the final touches to your latest podcasts? Clean up the soundtrack of that holiday video. Mix together a few takes from your last jamming session. Process the audio files of the video game you're creating to sound just right. But look no further. Whatever audio-related task you're looking to perform, Amadeus Pro is the tool for you. It's the Swiss Army knife of sound editing. Go to hairersoft.com. HairerSoft.com. So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
Ready to save? Then you're ready for the Super Summer Sale at Herbal Healer Academy. Herbal Healer has been the leader in quality natural supplements for 23 years. Log on to HerbalHealer.com and take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on 500 parts per million colloidal silver. The best pharmaceutical grade available at all sizes on sale. Super Male Plex with Uhimbe and Super Femplex for summer toning. Buy glucosamine chondroitin 60 caps summer sale priced at only $12. Colon Enhancer 250 caps, summer sale priced at just $18. And if your brain's a little foggy, we have a great supplement on sale called Memory Power. Log on and hit the postcard specials link for more super summer savings at HerbalHealer.com. As always, new customers get a free catalog with first order. Herbal Healer Academy, healing the world with nature one person at a time.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com. Or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
You can't argue with success. And many people have found great success in fighting back colds and flu viruses with Ali-C, the world's best garlic extract. So now, it's time to get even more success with the other great quality natural products from Affinity Health Products. Like C-Energy Liquid Vitamins, Lose and Snooze, and the One Day Diet. Or Human Growth Hormone Support, Menopause Specialist for Women, and Joint Specialist. See these and many other quality Affinity Health products for men and women online at AffinityHealthProducts.com. That's A-F-F-I-N-I-T-Y HealthProducts.com. Or call in your orders at 877-888-7126. That's 1-877-888-7126. Trust your health to the makers of Ali-C, the world's best garlic extract. Affinity Health Products, the finest and most innovative natural health products available.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
We're back, Gene and Chris, talking to Peter Robbins, and something caught his eye. He's 14 years old, which is about 375 years ago.
Pretty much.
And I speak as somebody who remembers my childhood back when the Egyptians were... before the dinosaurs ruled the Earth. So
wow.
Go on, Peter.
Okay, yeah, I saw five silvery white disc-shaped objects, like ellipses, coming in at a very high rate of speed and simply stopping well above the house across the street owned by a family named Parker. And I said one word. It was either Helen or look. And we looked. And there they were. They hung in a very precise, what I have to describe as a military kind of V formation. Depending on how big they were like brushed aluminum. I mean, they weren't shining like stainless steel. There was no question they were metallic. Again, there was nothing ambiguous or ethereal about it. And they were close enough that we both could clearly see along the edges of each disc regular markings that were off the color of the metallic look that we could only read the way you'd see windows, you know, on a commercial aircraft. Well, we didn't speak. We just looked and looked and looked. And to this day, when I reflect on this, I experienced something I've come to call the checklist phenomena, and that in several hundred interviews I've done with people who have had memorable sightings, often they describe the same phenomena, and it goes something like this. It's or they're not planes, helicopter, clouds, reflections from the ground, a floating plastic bag. Well, they didn't have them then. We used stone bags. And then at a certain point, you hit the wall. And for me, at that moment, as just, I was a raging adolescent being run by my hormones and a desire for some cooler clothes and a girlfriend. And I experienced a moment of what I can only describe as cosmic loneliness. It was just, oh my God. I had always intuited from the adult world these were nonsense, and of course I enjoyed my share of the movies at the time, wonderful black and whites that now considered classics, but there they were, and there were no appendages, no tails, no wings, no nothing. And in regression, it's almost, for me, poignant. My last words before I get a sense of what I'm looking at, and it's a phrase I would not use now, but I might have used as a kid, was secret government test planes. I'll bet there's some kind of secret government test plane.
That's and funny because people in those years did believe that.
Yeah.
You know, that some UFOs were secret government test planes. But let me ask you one quick question to cut to the chase here. Okay.
Yeah.
When you underwent hypnotic regression, did it bring forth details you weren't consciously aware of or had not considered?
Great question. Literally two. And they were that before I went unconscious during this experience, and before everything went black, it went blue for a moment, and that when I came to, I was so enraged, I would say for a split second, I felt like killing somebody, and then I calmed down. I went into therapy in part because of this back in the day, and I did so with a remarkable psychotherapist named Ellsworth F. Baker, if anybody wants to Google that name. Dr. Baker had been the former first assistant of Wilhelm Reich for the last 11 years of his life. I'm very involved with Reich's work since I was 19 years old, I guess. And Baker had had two sightings of UFOs as well, one with Reich during cloud busting operations in the 50s and another over his home in Red Bank, New Jersey. And I knew this was somebody that would not laugh at me. I wanted desperately to integrate this feeling of being split off from the world by knowing or think I knew something that, you know, everybody else was sleepwalking around. But again, in regression, I went in to confirm my memories and discover these two tiny new memories. And what I understand now and I'm very comfortable with is, and my sister was actually taken when I was knocked out. And there was that moment of I was running to the front door at this point. I had had it and was running into the house to tell our mother about what we were seeing in the sky. And I was a little kid who was knocked out from behind by, you know, on a certain level, in my mind, a cosmic bully. And that afternoon, Helen said, do you want to talk about this? And I said, no. And the next day led to the next week, led to the next year. And when I said 14 and a half years later, in amazement that she had confirmed my memories, why didn't we ever talk about this? She reminded me that I had asked not to. She loved me and respected me as her brother, and that was that. It can be that simple sometimes.
Peter, I have a couple of questions. You know, I'm absolutely fascinated by your account. And, you know, a couple of things immediately come to mind. You say you blacked out. Now, do you have a sense of the actual duration of the event, the actual sighting event that you are consciously aware of? And does that differ from some sort of hypnotic regression information that may, you know, suggest a different number?
Yeah.
In other words, in your mind, to your best estimate, how long were those objects hovering there? What was the duration of the experience? That's my first question.
Helen and I agreed first that we were looking at them hanging in the sky for possibly 2 minutes. That is an incredibly long amount of time.
Yeah.
Now, Helen was just 12, and what I really grasp now is she was still at the end of childhood, the real childhood, with the possibility of imaginary friends and all that. And she told me that she never forgot it. It was something that she reflected on very often in the intervening years, but said it always made her feel special and that sooner or later she knew we would talk about it and she had other things to do. However, for me, when the memory returned, and again, if you want, I can go into why I think it returned when it did, but it's sort of immaterial, it returned with a vengeance that left me feeling like maybe I was going crazy. How could I have forgotten something that was now running through my head like a reel of tape and that I knew had happened as well as I know I'm talking to you guys right now? My first thought around how long I was out based on this return memory was not any knowledge, but a hope. I hoped it was a minute or two. When I came to, my sister was not there, and I went into the house and walked upstairs. She shared a room with my other sister at the top of the stairs, and there she was, looking out of the window with her back to me, looking into the yard, and it was a private moment, and that's when I went downstairs and told her mom. But as I explored this with Bud, with Pete, with the other regression therapist, and then starting over the years that followed, to begin to really have hands-on with other case material and meeting many, many people who had had similar experiences, occasionally with siblings or close friends or what have you, it just seemed more and more logical that I was out for a longer period of time. How long, I couldn't say, but long enough that my sister, who had extraordinarily vivid memories of going up, up, up with her hair blowing and the bottom of one of these things getting larger and larger, that it happened while she was gone. I will ask the next rhetorical question, which was, how could I have been lying there for 20 minutes or half an hour or longer or whatever without anybody seeing me? Well, this was a very rural village. It was a late spring, early summer day, and there was nothing going on. There was nobody. If anybody drove by the house, the chances are, you know, I was lying down. They might not have seen me anyway. But how
so
long
when you
was
came to, you were actually lying on the lawn, or where were you? In
I was literally at that point. I was running as fast as my little kids could take me to the front door, and was cutting laterally across the lawn to that point where the walkway came to the front door.
Okay, so you assume that you were knocked down, basically.
Well, there is more. Not only was I, but when I said that there was a flash of blue before everything went black, and that was my conscious memory, my sister then, when she finished telling me what she remembered, said, but there's more and you're not going to like it. Words I will never forget. I mean, that was amazing. And I said, what? And she said, well, I saw you kind of peel off from my right there with my peripheral vision. But frankly, I wasn't going to stop looking at them. This was the most amazing thing I had ever seen. And I think that's a reaction a lot of people have when they look at something like this. They may be anxious, but they know it's going to disappear and they'll never see it again, very possibly.
Amazing. So amazing. We'll have to continue in just a moment with Peter Robbins. You're hearing Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans the galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S. Attack of the Rockaways, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Local Army Navy surplus stores are hard to find these days, but not military issue supplies. They're right here online at mainmilitary.com. That's right, just like the state, M-A-I-N-E, military.com. We have everything for true, total preparedness. MaineMilitary.com is not a typical website. It has much more than your old surplus store. Quality military-issue survival gear like canteens, mess kits, utensils, gas masks, filters, and chemical suits, magnesium fire-starting tools, strike anywhere, waterproof, and storm matches, first aid kits, splints, tourniquets, parachute 550 cord, military manuals, sandbags by the bale, and a huge Molly assortment of vests and pouches for every need. Call 207-989-6783, 207-989-6783, or visit MaineMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, military.com, the main name in military supply.
OpticsPlanet.com is where discerning gun owners and outdoorsmen go to gear up. OpticsPlanet has the best selection of rifle scopes, red dots, night vision, holsters, bags, and tactical gear on the planet. With always low prices, free shipping on most orders, and expert customer service. Go to OpticsPlanet.com/GCN to get a free gift with purchase. That's OpticsPlanet.com/GCN or call 800-332-OPTICS, 800-332-6784.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Energy, energy, and more energy.
We all need it. Get the energy you need quick through the powers of wild forest extracts. Wild Chaga and Birch Bark are the secrets of the forest used exclusively by Russian athletes. Wild Chaga is the world's top source of superoxide dismutase, the critical enzyme that blocks the aging process. Chaga is good for your heart and even helps support healthy arteries. Wild Birch Extract is the top source of betulin, a natural sterol needed by every cell of the body. And healthy cells mean a healthy body and a more powerful you. No wonder it's known as a king of all herbs. Experience real energy and power like you've never dreamed possible. Take Chago Charge Tea with Wild Birch Bark every day and Chagamax capsules to get the energy you need.
You deserve it.
Order today by calling 877-817-9829. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Our guest is Peter Robbins. The book, of course, that he wrote that we all know about is Left at Eastgate, co-author with Larry Warren. But obviously, he's been associated very closely with the abduction scenario where he and his sister see a UFO and he's zapped with a blue light. And we were going into what happened next.
Yeah, and there were five of them in a formation. And I know how this sounds to some people, and, you know, I remember my esteemed friend and colleague Travis Walton once saying in a lecture that he not only understood why people, so many people thought he was crazy or a liar, but he probably would have felt the same way too at a certain point in his life. And it's not that it's impossible, it just couldn't be.
Well, until you've been there, it's impossible to know what it's like. And, you know, I had an experience when I was 7 years old that, you know, for many years, even, you know, after becoming publicly, you know, involved in this field, I was very reluctant to come forward.
Of course. That's so easy to understand. Gosh. For me, I talked about it fairly early on, but I have never, ever not told the truth about it, but I have not discussed certain aspects of it. For example, that this memory of Helen saying within 2 or 3 seconds, her count, of this beam of me disappearing to run into the house, she watched as one of these craft, if you will, shot out a blue beam of light. And she was very specific here to say that in itself was mind-blowing. It's a clear day. It's not, you know, for example, a heavily foggy kind of condition where if you shone a laser, you know, you'd see that line bouncing off of a billion droplets of moisture. She saw the light as though it was, you know, defined on each side. And she turned. She saw me in it. The light went out. I went down. The next thing she remembers, she's on her way up. Now, let me also tell you, conscious memory, my last three memories before everything went out was something that I actually feel a lot saner talking about, having heard so many other accounts directly from people in similar-ish situations. The first aspect, and this sounds impossible, is that my attention was completely gone within 2 or 3 seconds from these things in the sky. I was not thinking about them. Well, how could that be? The reason was something actually a little more interesting was happening. I think what had happened was I had lost all motor coordination and was going down while I was running. But for me, it was an incredibly slow motion. And as I started to fall, I'm coming in toward the walkway. And again, this will kind of locate my mentality at the time. I'm looking, getting bigger and bigger, at a number of anthills being worked on by their occupants and thinking about, gee, look at the ants, and I rule them, and they look at me cross-eyed, I can wipe them out. Number two, how beautiful my mom's forsythia bushes look. They were pale blue, and she was a great gardener. And number three, and I swear to you, this is it. My third memory before everything went black was, what a lovely day this is. Now, again, I say that without hesitation and proudly because there are so many other people that I have interviewed or worked with or through Bud or met who have described extremely similar phenomena.
Do you think, parenthetically, Peter, do you think that positive impression is being implanted to reduce your sensation of fear?
It wouldn't surprise me, although there may be a series of, like, physiological synapses that snap in. Normally, if you're falling and you might hurt yourself, and I did scrape my right forearm very nicely. In fact, my first physical sensation when I awoke was a throbbing in my right forearm, and I swear once again, I mean, I've got the tapes. I look at it, and it's a big red bruise that you know is going to be very nice for a boy in a few days. And my conscious words are, what a great scab that's going to be. You know, a true boy's red badge of honor.
Oh, I love those scabs, right. Yes.
Yeah.
Scab of honor.
I have a quick question here. Peter, you are, you're such a bright, eloquent guy, and you know, I mean, you know, I edited this Dialogues and Disclosure project.
Yeah, I'm so glad you
did. My favorite interview.
No
or
joke.
Dialogue was you and Gary Heseltine talking.
Oh, wow.
I was dazzled by your brilliance. I'm not stroking you here. I really mean that.
Thank you.
And, you know, being such a bright kid, having such an incredible experience like this, I'm sure one of the first things that you did was start diving into, checking around to see if anybody else had seen these objects. Now, was there any sort of sighting wave going on at the time? Were you able to uncover any corroborating witnesses? Did you mention this to anybody, or did you pull back and kind of like keep it hidden and not really
perfect.
Discuss? I mean, what was your process?
I will give you a two-part answer to that, and thank you for asking it. When it happened, again, and I stress this, and nature is kind. We remember certain things happen, but we don't remember exactly what we were going through. And anybody think back to, you know, being in the seventh or eighth grade and the mortification of, you know, acne or having, you know, not cool clothes or having a crush on a girl makes fun of you, whatever. I knew, as well as I knew anything, that if I reported what Helen and I had seen to even my best buddies in junior high school, word would get around. And that there is this network of girls that is connected up around the planet and that they would hear about this and that none of them would ever have sex with me for my whole life.
This was, of course, the early version of Facebook. Before there was Facebook and Twitter, before there was MySpace, you had this quiet worldwide network.
I was very concerned. The peer pressure aspect and the ridicule factor was something I did think about. I will tell you, over the next week or two, I struggled. And this is one of the reasons why that mantra of it can't be, therefore it isn't, or therefore it's something else, is something I'm bad around, because that is exactly the point that I took. It couldn't have been machines of undetermined origin under intelligent control from parts unknown of advanced technology. It had to be something else. Whatever it was getting in my way, and I really wanted to go on to other things. And in a matter of weeks, I genuinely had put it behind me, and then 14 and a half years later, I'm living in a loft in Chinatown. I'm in my 20s. I'm a young artist. I'm teaching painting at the School of Visual Arts, the best art school where I graduated from. I've got a beautiful girlfriend who believes in me. I'm doing contracting and blue-collar work in Soho and renovating old buildings into galleries. I've got everything I want. I'm selling my work a couple of times a year. My dream is coming true. And Chinese New Year at the time, up until Mr. Giuliani, miserable bastard, became mayor, the Chinese we looked the other way as far as 4th of July fireworks went. Now they use poppers and things. He declared it illegal. But at the time, if you lived in Chinatown, you were like in the DMZ for 72 hours. So I hadn't slept at all in days. And I had also just gone through a portfolio of drawings that my grandmother had saved for me and given to me not long before, of drawings I had done as a child. And I think these things, in a way, came together. And the other most important thing is, I guess my mind was simply ready to begin to address it. Now, once the memory returned, yes, the answer to your question was I was able to get access to the newspaper morgues of the Newsday, the paper I grew up with, as well as the New York Times and the Long Island Post. I was able to locate the event as well as I could in June of 1961. And from there, I went backwards and forwards about 6 months in each newspaper and found nothing. For me, that was something that began to get me interested in UFOs and the media, which has become another specialty of mine. If you're going to see a UFO, are you going to call the newspaper and report it? Oh, they're going to love that. These things, unless it's a mass sighting, they often do not get reported because people are reticent to do so. Certainly were then, and certainly to a degree are now.
It makes sense. Having gone through a different but similar experience, I definitely can appreciate that. Well, let's move on. I mean, I think you've really established or reestablished for our listeners your absolute fascination here. Let's go back to your work with the Intruders Foundation and. And then later on, I have a couple of questions dealing with Rendlesham, and obviously we need to carve out some time for that particular subject as well. But
what I was doing, Chris, before we were doing that, was to kind of just do a little more myth busting about abduction, investigation, and results, get people more acclimated to what's really going on, and then we can go into more of the work of the Intruders Foundation, things we've discovered, and some things that are left out there on the table that we don't fully understand. The guest is Peter Robbins. The book is Left at Eastgate, co-author with Larry Warren about Rendlesham. He's also a board member of the Intruders Foundation, founded by the late Bud Hopkins. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strip and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.